Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of the Startup Hustle podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conaway, founder and CEO of Innovate Her KC. And friends, I got to tell you, today's episode is sponsored by Fullscale. And we love Fullscale around here. Hiring software developers is difficult, but Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably. And they have the platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. You can also, I suspect you can also check the show notes if you just want to clicky-clicky a link. But definitely check out Fullscale. So today, friends, we have with us, I'm always excited when I talk to folks who end up on one of our top startups lists. Those are some of my favorite episodes to record with Matt DeCourcy. And we visit cities across the country, someday the world. But we visit these startups, we talk to these founders, and we learn about a city. Well, today we're going to be talking to one of our top startups of Las Vegas winners. Really, really excited to talk to Brooke Fiamara, co-founder and co-CEO of Optics. Brooke, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lauren, for having me. I'm super excited to be here. I'm a new podcast listener just in general. And so it's really cool to be on this side of it and not in my car listening on the way to work. So.
Yeah, I know you're going to have new insight as you go forth into the world and listen to new podcasts because you've been on the other side. Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm really excited to crack into it. And so I'm just going to ask you, hey, Brooke, tell us about your journey.
Sure. So my name, Brooke Fiamara, one of the co-founders and co-CEOs of Optics. We are a Las Vegas-based startup. However, I've got team members all over the world. So we started the company about 4 years ago and have since grown to over 60 employees. So it has been quite a journey. For me, I was born in Texas. My parents moved to Vegas for opportunity. And that's where I grew up. I went to high school in Vegas. I stayed in Vegas for college. I went to UNLV, studied marketing, and went into the casino industry, which, you know, living in Vegas wasn't.
I feel like that's not a super big stretch. Like, that's not a surprise.
Right. Exactly. Like, when I never pictured myself growing up and kind of moving into gaming, but being in Vegas and getting that degree, there's tons of opportunity.
Yeah.
Started line level, basically entry level management job, coordinator job. From there, I worked my way up through like the local casino market, station casinos. For those of you that have been to Vegas, have you been to Vegas?
I have not. It's on my short list.
What?
I just haven't. And here's the thing. I'm not a desert person. So that's a part of it as well. I'm not a huge gambler. I'm one of those people, like, I'll take $20 to the casino maybe once every 5 years and call it a day. But I have heard about the spectacle of Vegas, and I've heard that it's one of those things that you need to experience. Is that what you find, that like it's just a step beyond entertainment? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Definitely. Like, I truly think there's something for everyone. So yeah. I heard from you, I'm not really a gambler. You know, that's not really my scene. Don't stay on the strip, right? Like, I spent my entire career in the local side of things, and there are some beautiful resorts that don't even touch the strip. You want great spas, great restaurants, great entertainment. It truly is just a special place to visit. And for me, a special place to live. Like, I really wouldn't live anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. So now that I know you, Brooke, like, someday I'm going to just email you and be like, hey, girl, hey, coming to Vegas. Where do I need to go? And can we coffee? Like, are you open to that?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Because I feel like I need a Vegas shepherd, like someone who can help me maximize the experience, right?
Yes.
I've heard it is just... it's incredible. It's phenomenal. You know, so hard plug, Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm really interested to hear about the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Las Vegas. Can you talk to us a little bit about your experiences there?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to be part of the startup community in Vegas. I think that we continue to make waves and make a presence in Vegas. I don't think people think of Las Vegas as a tech kind of hub. And I think today,
when you think of the gaming industry alone, that is an immense amount of technology related to that, right?
That's right. There's tons of technology obviously being utilized throughout the city and in the various industries that our city thrives upon. But the actual like startups of non-legacy businesses that are used in these casinos or just in any, you know, security, I think of a lot of our real estate kind of startups in Vegas. It's not considered a hub, but I think we're growing, and yeah. I think that our community is growing, and it's a great place to start a business. You've got low cost of rent for office spaces. There's so many different areas within the city to expand. You've got great talent pools. Our universities continue to get better. We've got tons of people looking at Las Vegas as alternatives to the higher cost cities like San Francisco and LA, which, you know, have tons of talent. And so it really is a special place to start a company.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, like I said, I really love recording top startups episodes. And I remember Matt and I, like, we were kind of going through the set list and talking about the different companies and things like that. And one of the things that I noticed around Las Vegas, and I don't think this was so much of a surprise, it was just something that was kind of glaringly obvious, but there's a lot of development. There's a lot of research and design being done around the gaming industry in Vegas. And when we go to top startups, we always try to find the through line. You know, when we went to Seattle, that was a lot of deep tech. You know, here in the Midwest, we have a focus on ag tech and animal health. And like each city or each geography that we focus on kind of has its own flavor. And so talk to us a little bit about how, well, first off, talk to us about Optix, but can you talk to us about how Optix grew within this Las Vegas kind of gaming tech environment?
Yeah, I think you said it exactly right. Right, we in Vegas naturally just have an industry that our city thrives upon, which is gaming, and the amount of data that our casino operations are collecting is immense, and it only continues to grow. And the importance of, and we see this in every industry that kind of revolves around data, we see the same emphasis that can be applied, whether it's, you know, medical or hospitality or gaming, the immense amount of data that we have and the need to distill that down to like specific action for the team members, the humans that are interacting with that data and making decisions on the data, just continues to grow. And that's where Optix comes in, specific to the gaming industry. So our product was designed to ingest and distill large amounts of data sets throughout a casino's ecosystem. So you can think of a casino, or at least I think of a casino, as like, honestly, 10 businesses in one. And it's one of the things that I think is the most fascinating part about working in a casino, is that you really get exposed to running restaurants. Right. That in and of itself is its own industry with its own ecosystem of data and its own, you know, legacy systems.
Yeah.
And then you move into hotel management and running a hotel. And then you've got the slot floor and gaming, and just, you could think of it like, if you wanted to relate it to another industry, an arcade, right?
Yeah.
You're collecting money from people, you're watching what games that they play, and you're trying to put the right games on the floor for those.
Well, people. But then you also have the added layer of security all throughout, because like massive amounts of money are running through these operations at any given time. And you have a lot of people out there who might want to game the system, you know? And so there are a lot of industries that are just kind of coalescing into one.
Security.
Yeah.
Compliance, not only at the state level, at the federal level. I mean, it is an incredibly complex ecosystem of operations, which I think is fascinating, because I think if you only work in a restaurant, that is your exposure. If you only work in a hotel, that's your exposure. In gaming and casinos, it's all of it.
Right.
And so when you have a need to kind of create an ecosystem of all those different data points and interactions for your patrons that your patrons are going to and experiencing, you need a tool like Optics that pulls all that data into a single place and then operationalizes it for those different verticals, whether it's hotel, food and beverage, marketing, player development / VIP, or even just slot floor optimization. And that's what we do. We take all the data and then we operationalize it, whether it's through artificial intelligence modeling, or whether it's just through, you know, standard reporting, or whether it's through actually, you know, tasking a team member to do something.
Well, and so that operationalizing people, ooh, that is a difficult word to say, but you know, the O word, when you talk about that, like, you know, Matt and I have often talked about the fact that data is only as strong or helpful as what you do with it, how you create those actionable tactics and outcomes that support the success of each area of your business. And so, you know, you say reporting, you say, you know, modeling and forecasting, like these are all extremely useful things. But talk to us about use case. Like, do you have maybe a user who was able to take data insight gleaned and turn it into success? Like, do you have some use cases for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you, I think one of my favorite and most fun use cases is really around, you know, like we were talking about the arcade and kind of how a slot floor lays out and putting the right games in the right place for the right players. So with Optics, basically what our operators can do is look at holistically at their slot floor, and our AI models will go through and look at every single game, the shape of the game, the way that the game plays, the location of the game on the floor, who plays those types of games, and the demographic of that player that plays that type of game. And we will present a recommendation to an operator and say, hey, you know, these specific games from this manufacturer, you should take off the floor and replace them with this particular type of game, in addition to swapping these five games around. And if you do that, you will make more money.
Yeah.
Free Optics, or for properties that don't have Optics, they do this all day long, right? Yeah. That is their whole job. It's to look at the information.
But they're kind of guessing, right? And they're educated guesses, but they're based on biased human experience, whereas Optics is pulling data. Right?
Actual information. So we went back, we took our entire Optics database of customers across the United States, and we looked at every slot move that they've done over the past 5 years. Okay. So we're talking hundreds and hundreds of moves. And we compared the performance of the game before the move to the performance of the game after the move. So these are decisions that were made without Optics.
Right.
And essentially what we found is that flip a coin. It's a 50-50 proposition. 50% of those slot moves that were made without Optics were good for business, and 50% were bad for business.
Okay.
So essentially, like, toss a coin, maybe this one will work, maybe
six
it won't
to one,
work.
Half a dozen of the other.
Exactly. Like, every two moves you do, one's canceling the other one out.
Right.
We then started studying, okay, well, let's take the Optics model and run it through those same moves. Which ones would Optics have said, hey, that's a good decision for the business?
Yeah.
When we went back and looked at that information, if the operators would have only done the swaps or the changes that Optics had greenlighted, that 50-50 proposition would have turned to a 70-30 proposition in the favor of the operator. That is material savings, not only in time and labor, because you know, moving a slot floor,
you have to move as many, right?
Very consuming, yeah, and it's disruptive to the floor. It takes a lot of labor and manpower, but it also has a massive impact on revenue. So you've got like the dream scenario: grow revenue, cut expense, and that's just an example of how our tool immediately can impact a property.
Gotta love that data. Gotta love that data. So talk to us a little bit about how I'm very, very curious as to how you, Brooke, entered into this realm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is the actual operations of a casino. So I don't really have a background in technology. You know, I come from the operator side of the business, as we would call it. But my responsibility, my role in my previous organization was to identify and leverage technology for our team, for our properties and our teams to use.
Yeah.
And through that process, you know, I learned a lot about the tools that were in the marketplace. I learned a lot about the gaps of the tools in the marketplace. And really what I discovered through, you know, my tenure as an operator was that all of the tools on the market were designed and developed by really smart engineers, right? Yeah. So you had people who had come from the technology side of gaming who said, hey, if I break out on my own and create this product, you know, we think it could do really well.
Yeah.
The problem is that those products were very tech forward and not operationally friendly. So I always say you can have the most innovative, cool technology, but if it's hard to use and the actual end user doesn't understand it, it doesn't matter. And that's what I was running into constantly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I thought to myself, if we could create a product that did all of the amazing things that we need to do with the data, but present it to the user through a UI that was understood, operationally friendly, and really only gave them the things that they needed to know.
Yeah.
I felt like we could really win in this space because it's a big gap. It was a big gap at the time. We've obviously closed that gap and filled that gap with optics. But at the time, there wasn't a tool I could put in front of just a normal non-techie casino operator that they would just intuitively pick up right away.
Yeah.
And that's what we set out to solve. So that's
I love that so much. And I mean, we talk about the power of things like dashboards, even if it's just systems that are talking to each other that have historically not talked to each other, like that can be transformative for a business. But I think, I mean, clearly you have hit your value proposition on the head. Like you got it. It's the fact that like, I know so many folks who are experts at what they do and they are passionate about the products and services that they sell, but you show us like lines and lines of data, like it makes your heart like skip a beat because you're like, it's too much. And so often a lot of the power, it lies in making this information accessible. That's the real key, because information, data, like all of the research, all of this stuff is only helpful if you are able to put it to executable, positive, fluid forward use, you know? And so you're absolutely right. Like I have to, my marketing clients, I tell people, I'm like, look, you can use all the fancy tools and tricks that in the world, you can try them all. But if you don't actually sit down and use them on a regular basis, it means nothing. So right. I love that that is how you chose to attack a very real problem that represents, I would have to imagine, billions in lost revenue, lost productive time, you're addressing a very serious problem and you're doing it in such an organic kind of way, you know?
Yeah, how I know we've like accomplished our goal, and of course goals are evolving. We all know that in startups, like we start one way and then we tackle that and we pivot into two more goals and we're constantly doing that. But like our core reason we started the company was to like bridge that gap and really operationalize the data in a user-friendly way. And when we win deals, when I do demos and they say, wow, like this looks so easy to use.
Yeah.
I'm like, we made it. And
I'm done. Like, mission accomplished.
Yes. our UI designer, you know, we pulled, her name's Hannah. She's absolutely amazing. And she, we told her like, hey, this UI design, the way that we're going to build this product is going to be user-friendly. And so when you're thinking of designs of very complex things, I mean, we are, to your point, we're talking layers and layers and years of data that we have to present in an actionable, user-friendly way. I told her, I'm like, study Facebook, study Instagram, the thing, TikTok, the things you use every day are the same things that our users are using every day. And so whenever we can put a familiar feature in, the way we manage notifications, the way you swipe on your mobile app, use, pull inspiration from the things we know that are working in the market and the things we know that people like to use. And right, that's been really successful for us.
Yeah. Well, you're applying that multivariate perspective because you're taking insights gleaned from one area of life and applying it to another, which is a really, really smart way to go about disruptive work. Well done. So another really, really smart thing, friends, smart thing is putting the right team around you. And I can tell you that FullScale can help you do that. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult. We know that you think it has to be difficult, but it does not have to be difficult, especially when you visit FullScale.io, where you can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the FullScale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available testers, developers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit FullScale.io or check the show notes for the link to learn more. Friends, we are here today with Brooke Fiamara, co-founder and co-CEO of Optics. And so right now we're kind of delving into the tool. And one of the things that Brooke and her team, and shout out to Hannah, what's up? Brooke and her team have done a really fabulous job of taking a very hairy, very intimidating process, which is data collection and analysis, mm-hmm. and made it accessible and easy to do for users. The operators, I'm going to use the term. Look, I'm learning.
Yes.
But you're helping, you know, casino operators, entertainment operators, hospitality operators treat people better, serve their customers better. That's really kind of the end of the day. But one of the things that I'm really, really curious about, you know, you said that you had been getting this really fabulous feedback from folks who were seeing the UI in real time and saying, this is exactly what I needed, right? Talk to us about the development of that UI. Were you taking customer feedback or, you know, even potential target market feedback? And, you know, you said that you worked with Hannah, you know, what did that process look like when you were trying to figure out this is what we want the UI and the UX to be?
Great question. So I'm laughing because the very early days of our UI design was myself and a couple of our other team members in Excel and just like highlighting boxes and saying, okay, you know, this is how it's traditionally presented, you know, this type of data or this report, and here's how Optics would present it and how it would be simpler, easier to digest and why it would be. Mm-hmm. You know, we would show those like Excel designs to other operators. We would, you know, phone a friend essentially and say, hey, what do you think of this? Does this make sense? And we'd get some great feedback. We'd go back and iterate. Then we had Hannah come on and she's like, why do we have Excel? Let's, you know, move into like a
We're a tech-led, tech-enabled company. Maybe we could look at a technological solution.
That's right. So she brought actual UI tools to to the process.
Yay!
Which was a game changer. So,
sure.
And then, you know, she took our Excel designs and actually mocked them up into the tool. We use Figma. To do all of our UI designing. And from there, we were able to take actual designs that look like actual software and again, present them to friends and family who work in this business and say, hey, does this make sense?
Yeah.
I also just personally, having had worked with many tools, having had worked as an operator, I knew the challenges. Like I knew how the data needed to be presented to the different levels within an organization. Obviously, how you present something to an executive is going to be very different than presenting something to, you know, a line level team member. And so just being able to articulate that to somebody, Hannah being our UI designer, who has zero gaming experience, zero knowledge of this industry, I think actually was really, really powerful because she wasn't clouded by bias. She just looked at something very objectively and said, okay, if I was trying to make this as simple as possible, somebody who doesn't even understand what I'm looking at, here's what I would do. And I think through that process, and still today, 4 years later, that's exactly what we do. She looks at something, she reads the requirements, she spends, you know, 20 minutes kind of initial stab, and then we collaborate.
Yeah.
And as we've matured, as we've gotten customers, and as our roadmap gets more defined by actual customer requests and less by the optics team, we obviously are able to take that right back to the customer and get their feedback, which is really nice because, look, we didn't get it right all the time.
Right.
And it would be crazy to think we did. So it's really nice now having that customer base to be able to go to and say, hey, what do you think of this? And get their feedback and iterate.
Well, so of course I love that. Now, Brooke, I'm going to have to ask you, we're going to take a little detour.
Okay.
Because there is something that I wanted to ask you. And like, as you were talking, it just kind of like, it was knocking me in the face. Like, hey, ask her. But I can't help but notice that you're a woman. And it sounds like at least one of your technical team is a woman. Again, hey, Hannah, what's up? And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. Because I find when I think of the gaming industry, just as when I think of the technology industry, I do not necessarily think of women. I have that archetype of the cisgender, white, heteronormative male in positions of power. And so I'm wondering, like, talk to us about the industry. As a female founder who has surrounded yourself with at least a partially female team, has there been anything of note about that experience? We're surprising nobody. Listeners, you know, if you don't know by now, this is my thing. So you can't be surprised that I asked this question.
Look, gaming is 100% a male dominated industry. It still is today. But there are a couple things that I will say and things that I notice.
Yeah.
Just as I have grown up in this male dominated space. So one, I think that women, and this is probably true of all industries to be fair, but I do think that women are much quicker to denounce their own skill sets or look at a role or an opportunity and say, oh, you know, I only have 5 of the 10 skills, so I'm not qualified.
So there's actually a statistic that on average with job listings, men only need to satisfy 60% of the requirements to apply. Women actually need to satisfy 100% of the requirements to apply. That's a pretty big gap.
It's a huge gap. But, and I mean, that's interesting. I haven't read that study. I definitely want to go find it. In my experience, I found that it's women, it's their own holding themselves back. Like they feel like, oh, because I don't have 100% of the skills, I shouldn't apply.
Yeah.
Whereas, I got 30%. I'll apply. This is a perfect fit.
Yeah.
And so I think it comes down to like confidence and just knowing like there is nothing that's in a role that you want that you can't learn or accomplish or achieve with
right.
hard work. And I just don't think that, you know, a lot of women are just taught that early. And, you know, I am a mother of a young daughter and I am constantly teaching her and telling her. Just last night, she was saying how she can't do something. It's too hard. There's no way she's going to get it. And I'm like, how is a 7-year-old already thinking like that? No, you can absolutely do it. We're going to work for it.
Yeah.
And then I also think that
For you. Wait, really quick. Good for you, mama. Well done.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like, what do you mean you can't do this? Yes, you can do this. Anyone can do this. You just have to work. And I think that's a life lesson probably all genders have to learn is that you can't.
Yeah.
Nothing's just handed to you. You have to work for it.
Right.
But yeah, I think also the other thing I notice in meetings, a lot of women will be quiet. And, you know, wait to be called on or, you know, not feel as comfortable speaking up. And so I really try to be mindful of that in the room and actually seek out the opinions, like get people to speak up so that their opinions can be heard and that they're comfortable speaking those opinions. And finally, like the biggest thing, honestly, is just actually supporting other women. So rather than viewing this like competitive nature, and I feel like I've been very blessed in my career that, you know, I've had female mentors and haven't felt like this threatening ambiance. I know that's not the reality for some women. And so just kind of like supporting other women is obviously incredibly important in any male dominated industry, and like finding those male allies. And I actually co-chair a marketing committee for an organization called Global Gaming Women. And it is all about like,
sorry, for those of you just listening, my face just lit up like a Christmas tree. That was impressive. I could feel my face changing. Talk to us about Global Gaming Women.
Yeah, Global Gaming Women is an incredible organization that is dedicated to the empowerment and growth of females in the gaming industry. So our entire mission is to do exactly what you were just talking about, you know, give women the tools, resources, and education that they need to excel in their careers, and the support that they need, right? We're moms, we're busy, we've got all these things going on. And so I am just so happy to be a part of that organization. We're doing some amazing work with women in gaming specifically.
Yeah. Are you finding that the culture is changing? Well, to be perfectly honest, like I don't have a lot of context around what the culture was like before, but are you seeing change within the industry, more representation, more supportive policies and infrastructure to support diverse leadership within these? I'm hoping that you're seeing a positive trajectory, but what are you seeing?
Absolutely. I mean, 10 years ago, having like a DE&I committee within HR or having a team member dedicated to this within companies was almost unheard of. Not unheard of, like almost unheard of. Now it's very common. And I think that they're, you know, just as the world is changing, gaming is keeping up. And I think in an area where like typically gaming's many, many years behind in these specific areas, technology specifically. I do think that we're on a positive trajectory. We have more female founders and CEOs than ever. So we're really proud of that.
Well, so I want to ask, it's time for the tactical advice time. So we're on to this portion of the programming. But as you know, not every one of our listeners is involved in the gaming industry, but many of our listeners are involved in male dominant industries. It's just kind of what happens when you focus on startups and technology and all of those things. But talk to us. So you are great breaking ground. Optics is breaking ground as a company, kind of disrupting an industry, delivering information in new and very technologically savvy ways. But then you're also culturally disrupting an industry just by your mere presence and by your success. Like the fact that you have been successful and will continue to be successful, that's a representation thing. So talk to our audience, you know, what are some ways that you can disrupt without exploiting, you know? So like, for instance, you know, if we had a listener who wanted to make his environment more female friendly, woman friendly, more equitable, what are some ways that he might be able to do that? Does that make sense as a question? I can re-ask if you need me to.
No. it makes perfect sense. And I was talking, I kind of hit on it a little bit earlier about like finding your allies.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think if we're talking to a male audience, it's the inverse. It's recognizing that you have the opportunity to be an ally. Yeah. And I think what that means is simply, again, giving a comfortable space for the females in the room to have their opinions heard. You know, a lot of times females are going to be more naturally quiet. Of course, not all the time. But and I think that, you know, being an ally means calling on them, hey, Lauren, what's your opinion on this topic? It can be as simple as that.
Yeah.
That kind of gives them the opportunity to shine. I also think, you know, pulling women in that you think could be a good fit for a role, even if they don't apply. Because again, we know the stats, we know the facts. Women feel like they need to meet 100% of the criteria. And here's
another fun fact that will shore up your argument, because you're absolutely right. But fun fact, on average, women need to be asked 3 times to take on a leadership role. And that is whether or not to take the promotion. That is whether or not to run for office. That is whether or not to lead a board. When we look at opportunities that are available to women, we often have to be asked at least 3 times before we will consider taking on the taking on the role. And that's a lot of encouragement. Not a lot of people have patience for that kind of encouragement. And so you can see where like gaps are widened. And so I'm just going to piggyback on this brilliant thing that Brooke was saying. Like, if you notice that someone is hesitant, even though you've asked, like, don't be afraid to
ask again.
Sorry, I just wanted to throw that out there because, like, you were talking and I was like, dawning recognition. She's right.
it's so true. But I also think, and I see this with some of my female employees as well, when you're talking to these employees about these opportunities or whatever, you know, what they're thinking of is all the other commitments that they have, their family commitments, their home commitments. And so as much flexibility as you can give in terms of, I recognize this is not always doable, but if it's possible, hey, I know that your kids, you know, go to school at 8:30, that's drop off. We don't do meetings at 8:30. So you can do drop off. We can start our meetings at 9 or we can do our meetings at 7. And right. Just knowing, you know, giving that confidence to these female leaders that they can manage their calendar. They can block off the times that they need to, you know, run their other commitments. And that's something I do personally. And I try to lead by example for my team is that, like, I take my daughter to school. That's not something I'm willing to sacrifice.
Yeah.
I want to see her go in. Cool. My calendar's blocked during drop off. You need me before, you need me after, I'm available.
Yeah.
And so I think you just have to like set your boundaries. And as an ally, be respectful of those boundaries as long as they're able to deliver their work.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think any of us are super like, well, I'm not speaking for all of us. I'm saying I personally don't care how you get the job done as long as you get the job done, you know, and honestly, I mean, this goes for all marginalized communities, that kind of, I guess, notice and care around boundaries and balance. And, you know, I don't necessarily even believe that work-life balance is like possible all the time. But that being said, like, if you can support that, you're going to make it so much easier for folks who've been historically excluded and marginalized. Like, these are not won't situations. These are can't situations. I literally can't find childcare, so I might have to take a few more sick days or something like that. You know, when you bridge those gaps, you create equitable opportunity, access to that opportunity, and then you see industry change and become more inclusive and holistic, right?
And the payoff to the organization is massive. I mean, studies show like having diverse opinions at the table only makes the company better all around.
Right.
So
if you're not going to do it because it's the right thing to do it because it's going to help your bottom line. Like the data shows time and time again, you know, if you want your bottom line to increase and improve, like this is a mechanism by which to do that.
Right.
Have fun.
It's an easy one to implement and will have an immediate impact on your bottom line. I love that.
Sure. Well, all right. Well, so I took us down a nice little detour, but I want to bring it back to optics and I want to bring it back to you, Brooke, the leader that we're talking to. You're awesome. Talk to us about the future for Brooke, the future for optics. What are you hoping to see?
Oh, great question. So optics, we're 4 years young. So I feel like we're really out of that like immediate startup.
Yeah, you're not in like the 2 year precarious, like, am I going to lose my house or is today going to be a good day?
Exactly. So we're really in that, like, we are in growth still for sure. High growth.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself brings its own challenges, you know, balancing, you know, the growth with the product, with the resources. And so, you know, for the next 2 to 4 years, we're really going to maintain this growth trajectory. I see us expanding globally. We're moving into Canada. I see us tackling other markets. I mean, gaming is not something that's slowing down. In fact, more jurisdictions continue to legalize gambling. And then online gambling is a whole other space that's kind of taking over. And
we just got sports betting in Kansas, which is the state that's just to our neighbors. It's been really interesting watching this process unfold, like figuring out how to allocate revenues and how to, like, it's been really weird watching the process, but kind of exciting. So yeah, like this is an industry that only has the opportunity to grow.
That's right. Which means our product has to be able to adapt and pivot as the industry changes and grows. And so we're always keeping our finger on the pulse of that.
Good.
And so I'm really excited, you know, again, for this kind of high growth area and expansion outside of really the US and outside of just kind of core land-based gaming. I think you'll see us move into online gaming, more racing sports, because that's where the business is going.
Yeah. Well, so I'm very, very excited to see that to come to fruition. I am also very, very excited to hear you answer the human question. It is time. And so I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm interested to hear your response, but I'm going to give a caveat because I think I know where you might go with this. But what would you buy with $1 billion? And it can't be for anybody else. It has to just be for you. That's my caveat. Because I feel like you would be like, well, I would do all of these really nice things. And I'm like, no, what do you want?
Oh, $1 billion? And I can only buy $1 billion.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money. I don't even know what $1 billion can buy. I mean,
All right. Let's scale it. Let's make it more accessible. How about $1 million? You have $1 million to spend. That's a big jump, though. 10 million.
Yeah, that's a big jump. Okay. I'd probably buy an incredible vacation location, like somewhere where I could just go spend.
Are you going to buy yourself an island?
Maybe. But not a creepy island. Like, you can't do.
Yeah, no. It's going to be like a very beautiful Tahitian isle or something like that. I'm with you.
Yeah, but then I need like the permanent air transportation. So I also need to buy like a lifetime. I saw somebody spent $250,000 on like a lifetime United membership.
Nice.
They can fly like everywhere on United. So maybe something like that. So then I can just fly everywhere.
And I feel like that's like, I don't remember where we landed on the dollar amount, but I feel like that's a really nice thing to buy for yourself. Okay. I mean, it's somewhere in between $1 million and $1 billion. So
$1 million's a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, it really is. That was what came out of my mouth. And then I almost immediately rethought it. I was like, wait, that's too much. Well, I'll tell you what, Brooke, you are not too much. Thank you so much for, you're just right. You're just enough. So thank you for taking the time to be on the Startup Hustle podcast and sharing your story. It has been greatly, greatly appreciated.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Well, good. I am so, so glad to hear that. I have like my super secret goal for every recording episode that I have is how do we present the information in a fun way? So hold on really quick. Just hold on. Brooke, I'm going to pause this for a second. They're going to have to cut this out because I lost something, and you can tell because I have no idea where I'm going with the end of that sentence. So, Brooke, you know, one thing that you are not is too much. You are just enough, and you are just wonderful as you are, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Startup Hustle podcast with us.
Thank you so much. This was great. Really appreciate it.
Well, I am so glad that it was great. You know, what else is great, friends? Full Scale. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? Well, Full Scale can help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit fullscale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and then let the platform match you up with fully vetted, highly experienced software engineers, testers, and leaders. At Full Scale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit fullscale.io. And friends, I'm going to point you to our top startups episodes. If you're not already aware, and we've talked about it a couple of times here, Brooke and Optics was recently featured on our top Las Vegas startups episode for Startup Hustle. And we do those once a month. We go to another city across the U.S. and we talk to startup founders and we talk about startup founders and we find the coolest, hippest startups in an area, startups like Optics in Las Vegas. And we want to have conversations about startups and founders across the country. So if you have any suggestions, any ideas, places we should go, definitely reach out and let us know, startuphustle.xyz, or you can check the show notes. But you definitely want to listen to our top startups episode for Las Vegas, and you'll get to hear a little bit more about Optics and Brooke and what they do. You can check the show notes for more information, and we hope to see you download and get some really good information. But more than that, friends, we hope to see you keep coming back. We are very grateful that you listen to us week after week. And we hope you keep on doing it because we love putting Startup Hustle on for you. And we will catch you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.